Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, May the 10th. Well, it looks like it's going to be another gorgeous day. Hope you can enjoy some of it outdoors. And let me once again take a moment to thank everyone who is listening right now, and special thanks to those of you who decided to become contributing members of the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. Our Spring Pledge Drive, which started a week ago today, ended a couple of days early on Monday when we met the monetary goal of $275,000. Thanks again to the more than 2,100 of you who renewed or pledged for the first time. We appreciate your support. Now, on to the business of the hour, and that's talking with Bernard Goldberg, author of Crazies to the Left of Me, Wimps to the Right, How One Side Lost Its Mind and the Other Lost Its Nerve. We've talked with Mr. Goldberg before on this program about at least two of his previous books, Bias and Arrogance, which explored the liberal bias of the mainstream media and the arrogance of the media elite, the liberal elite. In this book, Bernard Goldberg talks about his own transformation from a liberal to a conservative and why lefties and wimpy Republicans get on his nerves. We will welcome your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Bernard Goldberg has won 8 Emmy Awards for his work at CBS News and HBO. In 2006, he won the Alfred DuPont Columbia University Award for his work as a journalist. He is the author of, as I mentioned, Bias and Arrogance and The 100 People Who Are Screwing Up America, and the just-published book Crazies to the Left of Me, Wimps to the Right, How One Side Lost Its Mind and the Other Lost Its Nerve. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome back to what you called in your book, Liberal Wisconsin.
Well, it is. It is.
Yeah, Liberal Wisconsin.
I spent time in Wisconsin. You know, I was a reporter with CBS News for 28 years, and I was just there with HBO's Real Sports, did a piece about the University of Wisconsin basketball team and how they actually graduate their athletes at that school.
Yeah.
So I like Wisconsin.
They're pretty good, too. But a liberal Wisconsin that passed a gay marriage ban last fall.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. There are, even in places like Wisconsin, and I mean that not in a bad way, even in places like Wisconsin, there's a feeling that we don't want to overturn thousands of years of religious tradition. And since you know those people better than I do, since you're in Wisconsin and I'm not, you know that they're not bigots, all of these people. I mean, they're decent people, just like people on the other side of the question are. And one of the things that troubles me about the left these days is that too often anybody who disagrees with certain things, whether it's affirmative action or gay rights or certain aspects of feminism, is seen as a Neanderthal and a bigot. And I just don't think that's true. I think there are people who are against certain things, like I'm against affirmative action, for instance. I'm against affirmative action because I believe, you know, I was a fighter for civil rights in my earlier days, and I think Martin Luther King was right about judging people based on the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And one of the reasons I moved to the right is, while I supported civil rights, I didn't sign on for racial preferences. I didn't sign on for that. While I supported women's rights, I didn't sign on for a woman's inalienable right to be a firefighter, for instance, even if she couldn't carry a man out of a burning building. And I said, wait a second, I'm for equal rights for black people, for women, but I'm not for those things. And I think there are others like me, and some of them may have voted the way they did on the gay marriage ban. By the way, I'm not against gay marriage, if you're interested in my view on that. I'm libertarian on it. I don't care if Adam marries Eve. I don't care if Adam marries Steve. It just doesn't matter. It's not an issue for me.
Yeah. What is your definition of a conservative?
Well, let me try to answer it this way. I think conservatives basically care about two things. I mean, they care about many things. You know, they care about security and all that. But they basically are for smaller government and the attendant lower taxes. I mean, they're not fancy, big ideas. They're for that kind of thing. And there are other things that go along with it. Liberals, on the other hand, are for bigger things. Liberals are for, I'll defend your right to the death to say things that I don't agree with, you know, for free speech and for the free exchange of ideas. These are much bigger things. And one of the things that troubles me, and it saddens me, it doesn't make me angry, it saddens me, is that I think too many liberals have forgotten how to be liberal. When you look at college campuses and you see people shouting down speakers that they disagree with, inevitably, it's liberals shouting down the conservative speaker. And I say, what happened to liberalism? I don't think I abandoned liberalism. I think liberalism abandoned me by becoming more too closed-minded and too orthodox. Liberals, I think, in many cases, are as orthodox as the conservatives they criticize all the time.
Now, talk a little bit more about your own transformation from a liberal to a conservative.
I grew up in a tenement in the Bronx, a lower middle class at best, lower middle class at best. And everybody in my neighborhood was a Democrat. And I mean literally everybody. There's a better chance that I'd run into a redhead from Helsinki, Finland in my old neighborhood than a Republican. I honestly believe they literally didn't exist. And my father worked in a factory, a very loud factory. He got up before dawn every day and went to this factory, and they put embroidery on. He worked with big, loud, clanking machines that put embroidery on everything from women's dresses to tablecloths. And in those days, the 1950s, men like my father and men who made steel and men who made cars, they were the backbone of the Democratic Party. The backbone today are guys who make sitcoms. The backbone today are actors who think they're smart because they're famous.
And why do you call them the backbone?
Because they carry a very big megaphone. And they call a lot of shots. And there's another group that probably, you know, they were Democrats back then too, but college professors, you know, there's hardly any diversity on college campuses these days. I said that to someone at my alma mater, Rutgers, and she said, "What are you talking about? We're trying to get more minority kids in." I said, "Not that kind of diversity. That's fine." I said, "How about some intellectual diversity?" So there's also, you know, the college professors who are, and one of them at the University of Wisconsin, by the way, thinks 9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah, we know. We've right. talked about him.
So, by the way, I'm not saying he's typical of liberals, but a poll came out, a Rasmussen poll, which is as legitimate as these polls get, just the other day, that said 35% of Democrats believe that George Bush had knowledge of 9/11 before it happened. Wow.
Yeah.
35%. I mean, in other words, this is an important point. It isn't just the crazies on the far left. It's like regular, normal, nice, decent liberals who you go to dinner with, who are your friends. They're my friends down here in Miami. And then you hear stuff like this and you say, "My God, what happened to you?"
Yeah. Well, you do take people like Rosie O'Donnell to task in your book, who also said recently that 9/11 was an inside job. But you took her to task for her that radical Christians were as dangerous.
I don't even know what radical Christians are.
Yeah.
I mean, she said radical Christians were as threatening in this country as radical Muslims, and even no matter what they are. I guarantee you one thing, they're not as threatening as radical Muslims. I mean, what are these radical Christians? By the way, I suspect she means conservative Christians. Interesting that conservative would be associated with terrorists. But do radical Christians go to church and plan beheadings? Do radical Christians go to church and plan how to hijack airplanes and fly them into buildings? It's insane. And when she said that, by the way, not in some crazy far-left website, but when she said it on a major American television network, ABC, the audience clapped.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, I find that really troubling.
I just saw you last night on, I think it was Scarborough Country.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was. Yeah. I was.
And you were talking about, though, that it wasn't just people like Rosie O'Donnell on the far left of the political spectrum, but typical regular liberals who you have dinner with, who the thing they share in common, maybe they don't believe that 9/11 was an inside job, but they share this all-consuming hatred of George Bush.
Yeah, that's very well put. I mean, you capture that perfectly. And in the book, it's a very important point. It makes the point that the craziness has infected regular folks. When I go to dinner with my liberal friends, everything is going fine until I make a mistake and say the magic words, George Bush. Look, I have plenty of disagreements with George Bush, starting with the war in Iraq, and there are other things after that. So, of course, it's legitimate to criticize this president or any other. I don't have a problem with that at all. But when you say George Bush, Bush derangement syndrome kicks in. Bush derangement syndrome, they start foaming at the mouth. It's as if they had Tourette's. They start spouting off things like liar, moron, retarded, a war criminal, and then it's a string of Halliburton, you know, and like Halliburton, Halliburton. Now, and you say, what is the matter with you? You were okay 10 seconds ago. There's a story I didn't tell on the show last night. It's a little lengthier, but I'll tell it very quickly. I play basketball with guys Saturday morning in Miami. And these are regular guys, business guys, lawyers, you know, they're just a bunch of nice guys. Well, there was a movie that came out a few months ago, a British movie, about the assassination, not of a generic president, but of President Bush. So I went up to one of the guys, very liberal guys, he's from Boston originally, and I said, Robert, what would you think of if someone really assassinated President Bush? You think that would be a good idea or a bad idea? I figured he'd give me a dirty look and walk away. Instead, he thought about it for a very long time and then said, probably, and he dragged that word out like that, probably a bad idea.
Let me take a short pause. We're talking with Bernard Goldberg, authors of Crazies to the Left of Me, Wimps to the Right, How One Side Lost Its Mind, the Other Lost Its Nerve. You know what? Our lines are full right now, but when someone hangs up, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or scoot us an email with your question or comment to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to The Ideas Network. This is The Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Jean Purcell in for Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6. After 5, Jean's guest has tips on how to write the perfect email and how to avoid pitfalls in email that can land you in hot water. That's coming up after 5 this afternoon. We're talking with Bernard Goldberg, a former CBS News correspondent, author of many different books. His latest, Crazies to the Left of Me, Wimps to the Right, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. You know, we've talked some about the crazies on the left. Who are the wimps to the right, Bernard Goldberg?
The wimps to the right are not conservatives. When I moved over to the dark side, as my liberal friends like to put it, by the way, sometimes my liberal friends say, maybe not in these exact words, but this is the gist of the message, you're not really conservative. And I say, well, why do you say that? And they say, well, you're not a bigot. You don't drool on yourself. You can read and write. And you're not married to your sister. And, you know, I'm thinking, great, this is how my friends see conservatives. But the wimps on the right are not conservative. I sort of like conservatives. I think these days they're the upbeat ones. They're the ones with some ideas that are not stagnant and trying. They're the ones trying to do something different in some areas. The wimps on the right, though, are Republicans who don't have the guts to stand up for their conservative values. Now, I'm not sure if the people listening to us on an NPR station in Wisconsin will fully understand this, but when I speak to conservatives around the country, trust me on this, conservatives are really, really annoyed with Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And they're annoyed because they don't, well, let's take the easiest example in the world, federal spending. Republicans take over both houses of Congress and the White House in 2000. And what's the first thing they do? The party of small government, the party of fiscal responsibility, the grown-up party, they start spending our money as if they were Imelda Marcos in a shoe store.
Yeah.
And conservatives notice that. They don't like the fact that they sold out their principles. And I think that's what conservatives are looking for in this upcoming presidential race. They're looking for somebody who stands for something and isn't going to wimp out on what he or she believes in. In the Republican case, it's going to be what he believes in. I think that's what they're looking for. And so those are the wimps on the right, Republicans who don't have the guts to stand up for their supposedly conservative values.
Yeah. Does that mean the compassionate conservatives who might, I don't know, vote for prescription drug coverage for the elderly?
Well, first, when I hear that term, compassionate conservative, I reach for my wallet. I mean, look, I'm not against, first of all, I told you where I grew up. My parents, you know, counted on Social Security when they were getting older. So, I mean, I'm not against that kind of stuff. I just don't think you can try to buy off every constituency group out there by spending gazillions of dollars on them, because the bill's going to come in at some point. So we give senior citizens this, and we give soccer moms that, and we give farmers something else. And we, you know, and it's like, yeah, the group that's getting it is happy with what they're getting, but everybody else isn't necessarily happy what some other group is getting. And mostly, again, speaking about conservatives, they just don't like the whole idea of spending that kind of money. Again, conservative, mm-hmm. You asked me what conservatives were about and for and what it meant. Well, they're for small government, and this administration. By the way, the president didn't veto even one of those spending bills.
Mm-hmm. So is the president a wimp on the right?
On this issue, he is, yeah.
You voted for him too, right?
I did. I voted. I used to vote Democratic, and then I had a transition period. I didn't vote for Ronald Reagan either time. I did vote for McGovern, and then more recently I did vote for him. But you know, you have to be practical, right? I mean, it wasn't a choice between George Bush and Mahatma Gandhi or somebody. It was a choice between George Bush and people who headed up a team I no longer had confidence in. So I voted for George Bush.
How about these 11, I think, moderate Republicans, that's how it's described on the AP wire, who met with President Bush yesterday to tell him it's time to be completely honest about the war in Iraq and such. Are they wimps?
No, they're not wimps. I'll tell you this. I don't want to say my best chapter because it's about Iraq, and I don't want to take credit for anything that's so, you know, that involves death like that. But in that chapter, first of all, if those people and others had gone to Bush 6 months ago, they would have been doing him a big favor, because the hypocrisy as it pertains to the war in Iraq on both sides is enough to choke a horse. I mean, the hypocrisy on the right is, if some liberal Democrat got us into this mess of a war, if Hillary Clinton got us into it, or Barack Obama, or John Kerry, or Al Gore, or John Edwards, if any of them had gotten into this, would Republicans have been making so many excuses over so long a time? I can't think of any. Would conservatives have? I can't think of any that would be supporting this mess if a liberal Democrat had gotten us into it. But the hypocrisy among my friends on the left is that if there's any kind of war that liberals, if not like, at least can accept, it's one involving humanitarian causes. And George Bush, while he didn't execute it, had a big idea. And the big idea, after WMD and all, was to bring some light to a very dark part of the world. If you can bring democracy to Iraq, who knows? Maybe you can bring democracy to a whole region, and that would make the world a better place. Well, he didn't execute on it. But my liberal friends will not give George Bush even 2 seconds of credit. They can't show 2 seconds of visceral joy that even if he stumbled onto it, he managed to shut down the state-sponsored torture chambers. He managed to stop women from being raped by government thugs. He stopped the mass execution of people who disagreed with the Saddam Hussein regime. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people, including some children, were found in mass graves. but liberals hate George Bush more than they love their own liberal values and principles. And that's why they can't give him even, as I say, 2 seconds of credit for that part of it.
Let's take some calls. Our lines are full. Bob in Mount Horeb is first. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Mr. Goldberg. Wasn't this obsessive hatred of Clinton similar?
Yeah, well, it's similar. Yes, similar, but not the same. And I think there are two differences. One difference is I think it's worse now, and I think it's going to be worse next. I fear it's going to be worse next time around because the poisonous atmosphere that both liberals and conservatives should detest is just getting worse. So, yes, there was too much vitriol and too much poison aimed at Clinton, certainly for my taste, but I think it's worse now because it's just ratcheting up. But the other thing, and we may not disagree, we may disagree on this, but I think this is an important point, at least from my perspective. The craziness against Clinton, the poison that was, you know, thrown out at Clinton, was mainly from the fringe right, the crazies on the far right. The stuff that's aimed at Bush, as I said earlier, is sort of mainstream left. It's because I know these people. As I say, they're my friends here in Miami. They're regular people. They're not fringe. They have regular jobs. They're normal, decent, nice, until you mention George Bush. And then it's off the charts. It's the Bush derangement syndrome, the acute onset of paranoia. And that, I think, is different than it was with Bill Clinton.
But so much of this is driven by the war.
Mm. Well, even so. Yeah, I agree. Well, I think it's driven by the fact that they think he stole the election. I think that's where it started. It started long before the war, that you know, he had no right to be president. I also think, by the way, even when I agree with liberals on this issue or that issue, and believe it or not, I do, I don't like the elitism of liberals. And I think the too many liberals look down on George Bush because they believe he's stupid. I mean, IQ is the coin of the realm of too many liberals. I worked at CBS News for 28 years. Talk about liberal elites. You know, they just think that people who are not smart are not good. A friend of mine there who had a PhD, a Phi Beta Kappa from Harvard, when I would mention somebody to him, the first thing he would ask is he smart? Mm-hmm. Not is he a good person or a good guy or any, is he smart? And I think that's one of the reasons that George Bush is also disliked so much. The mm-hmm. war, of course. But I think it started the day the Supreme Court ruled that the votes should stop being counted and the election was final and George Bush was the president.
Yeah. We did get a similar email from John in Park Falls who talked about how conservatives and Republicans went after Bill Clinton, but he goes on to say, and are still going after his wife. You want to talk about Hillary Clinton?
Well, they have every right to go after his wife if she's in the political arena, but I don't see them going after her the way they went after him. I don't think that's true. I will tell you that conservatives don't like Hillary Clinton. That's not a bulletin. They don't like Hillary Clinton, but I don't see the animosity aimed at her the way it was aimed at Bill Clinton.
Yeah. John also went on to say, I resent Mr. Goldberg's assertion that Rosie O'Donnell or the Hollywood Connection represents liberals or the Democratic Party, you know, saying that.
Fine. How about this? Does my friend Robert, who had to think about whether it was a good idea to assassinate the president, before he said probably not, does he represent it? How about all those people, those regular people who start, as I say, foaming at the mouth at the mere mention of the name George Bush? Do they? Who represents regular liberals and Democrats? Somebody has to. I mean, you know, Rosie is further to the left than most. I certainly agree with that. And the Hollywood, you know, liberals are maybe further to the left. But, you know, Democrat—that's their piggy bank for Democrats. If Democrats didn't want to be associated with those people, they wouldn't have to. They wouldn't go out there and take their money. I think the craziness that I described has infected regular folks too. I think the hard left has dragged the good folks on the left, too far to the left. Can I make one other point, like a personal point?
Mm-hmm.
I've spoken about other books that I've written in the past, and I've spoken to liberals, and I've never had any luck, not an ounce of luck, in convincing them even to just read what I've written. And I can't make anybody read my books. Would I like liberals to read it? Of course I would. Of course I would. I mean, people write books. I don't write books for money. I get paid to do it, but I don't write for money. I write because I want to say something, and I hope lots of people will read it. I have never had luck crossing the Rubicon to get, you know, my liberal friends to keep an open mind and read a point of view that they probably won't agree with, but maybe would say, you know, that's not a bad point he just made. So I'm reaching out to you, my friends. I'm asking you to give me a shot. If you don't, I'm not going to be surprised, but I'm hoping you do.
Thanks to John in Park Falls for the email. Jerry in Waterford is with us now. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. The thing that concerns me in this is the complicity of the news media as far as how things are reported and how they frame the text of the words. For example, on the news just before this show, they referred to the Gonzalez scandal. That doesn't mean the dictionary terminology of scandal. The scandal is something that's been proven, and it's an accusation. And then just on this show, it referred to 11 Republicans meeting to ask Bush to be completely honest. That's not what they asked him to do. They asked him to, they talked about the war situation. They did not ask him to be honest because they feel that he is honest. And also, Senator Lieberman cannot buy time on the news. If he was bad-mouthing Bush, he'd be on there all the time. But the fact that he supports the war, he gets absolutely no exposure at all.
All right, Jerry, you don't necessarily disagree with him, Bernard Goldberg?
Oh, I not only don't necessarily disagree with him, I totally agree with him. I think he's very perceptive on how the media slants the news. And it doesn't slant the news. It doesn't come out and say anybody who's against affirmative action or racial preferences is a bigot. Of course they don't say that. Bias, any kind of bias, whether it's racial bias or media bias, is about preconceived notions. And when so many people in mainstream American newsrooms are self-described as liberals, and vote Democratic, then you have a groupthink that takes over. And things are seen, whether they're about race or about feminism or about gay rights or about any of the other important social issues of our time, are seen through a certain liberal prism. And all the things to the right of center are seen as conservative. Absolutely fine. Absolutely accurate. But all the things, or many of the things, seen to the left of center are seen as middle of the road, are seen as moderate, are seen as rational and civilized and reasonable. That's because there's hardly any intellectual diversity in our newsrooms, in our big, important newsrooms, and that creates the kind of stuff that Jerry just mentioned.
Right, and Jerry, I appreciate the call. I don't want this to evolve into the media bias program, because we've done that with you before, Bernard Goldberg. But what about, is it the media bias that's causing President Bush to have such low approval ratings, or the war to have such low approval ratings?
No. I mean, believe me, I'm not an ideologue where I just say, you know, the automatic. No. The reason that the president's and the war's approval ratings are so low is because of the war.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are people who are just playing against the war. I get that. And there are people who would have been for the war if it were executed properly, if it were over by now. So, no, the media is not responsible for that. I will make one comment, though. What I've asked for in the past is that they give us all the bad news they can find out there in Iraq, and then go out and find some more bad news and give us that. But after that, tell us what else is going on. And if what else is going on is positive, tell us that, too, so we can have a complete picture. Because if all we're getting is negative news, then after a while, that drumbeat creates an image in our heads, and we think there's nothing good going on. Now, it's easy for me to say that sitting in Miami, Florida, because I don't want any reporters to go out and report about the opening of a school and get killed in the process, and then get all the kids in the school killed in the process, too. So it's very difficult to do what I'm suggesting. But my only complaint, if that's the right word, or my only concern, is that we should get all the bad news that they can report, no problem. But if there's also positive stuff going on, and if they can do it without getting themselves killed, that would help us understand what's going on over there a little better.
Our guest is Bernard Goldberg, award-winning journalist for CBS News, author of several books, including Bias and 100 People Who Are Screwing Up America, and the recently published Crazies to the Left of Me, Wimps to the Right, How One Side Lost Its Mind and the Other Lost Its Nerve. His latest book talks about his own transformation from a liberal to a conservative and why he thinks Republicans, not conservatives, Republicans are losing their way and have lost control of Congress. And talks about what it means to be a true conservative, why he's fed up not only with far left or liberal ideology, but with the wimps on the right, as he calls the gutless wonders in Washington who have sold out their principles for power. We welcome your thoughts and questions for him. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. Kathleen's first guest today talks about work that is in progress by research organizations and major institutions and scientists from around the world who are trying to catalog the 1.8 million named species on the planet. Sounds like a pretty big project. She'll talk with a guest from the Encyclopedia of Life coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking with Bernard Goldberg, author of Crazies to the Left of Me, Wimps to the Right, and our next caller is Derek in Round Lake, Illinois. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Hi. When I look at a political persuasion or when I look at political issues, I'm looking always at both sides, and I try to search for social justice agenda versus free market dogma or compassion versus selfish competitive race. And I find the establishment in the U.S., to speak colloquially, difference between Coke and Diet Coke. Since the left in this country does not have any kind of basic humanistic intellectualism based on the premises of social justice or on the premises of embettering the society, what you have here is a very artificial division between one side or the other. When the bottom line comes, where the elites are running the country, mm-hmm. they're simply doing everything for themselves. So this so-called artificial division between the left and right is really meaningless. Come from someone who has a little bit deeper understanding, since I've lived a lot of different places, how the real issues are being addressed and what is the very much a competitive streak into fixing the issues and also making the society a better place.
Let me suggest that you not flatter yourself by saying you have a deeper understanding. I think you have a different understanding. I think you have an understanding from a far left point of view. You don't think the Democrats are nearly liberal or humanistic or compassionate enough. And you look at it between corporate greed or selfishness on the one hand and humanistic on the other. You would probably think that we ought to raise the tax rate on the wealthiest Americans to what? I mean, what would be a good amount so that you can take my money and give it to people who aren't doing as well as I am? What percentage would be a fair one, do you think?
Well, let me give you an example.
Well, give me a number first.
I think 45%. Let me finish.
I didn't hear you, though.
He said 45%.
45%. You think it's okay to take 45% of my money to spend on social programs, many of which don't work, and give it to people who, for whatever reason, aren't as... I don't mean successful that I'm successful, but I mean aren't doing something that earns them. Look, I have great compassion for working poor people. I have no compassion for other poor people. I don't think poor people are noble by definition. I grew up in a poor family, and my father worked his rear end off from before dawn until nighttime. For those people, I will try to. I will help. You know, if my money could get them out of that group and into the middle class, great. But for people who don't want to really work hard, who don't take school seriously, who think that dropping out of school or think that having babies when they're 15 is just another lifestyle, I have no compassion for those people. I have no sympathy, and I don't want one penny of my hard-earned money going to support them.
Well, I think it's their issue here is what you get for your tax money right now. When you look at the European system, where they have a healthcare system which is widely built up, where the money is not going into military-industrial complex, where people have universal education, inclusive of the higher education, you realize the money you're paying right now, you're getting much less for it.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to get into
healthcare
and all that stuff right at the moment, Derek, but I appreciate your call. We'll do programs like that in the future. Maddie in Wapaka, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'd just like to disagree with your guest on a couple of things. He said that liberals would be against George Bush no matter what. I supported the war to start out until I found out that I was lied to, and also with regard to the press, if the press would have been on George Bush in the beginning, we wouldn't even be in this war.
Well, don't blame me for the press part, but how do you think George Bush lied to you? I'm curious about that.
Well, there was weapons of mass destruction, and there are no weapons of mass destruction.
Well, is it possible? What's your first name?
Maddie,
I assume at some point you've made a mistake about something, right? Is it necessarily a lie when you get something wrong? I was against this war from the outset, so I think I have a certain credibility on this issue. But I don't think he... Tell me what political sense it would make to lie about something like that, knowing that the lie would come out before the midterm elections in 2006 and that your party would go down the drain as a result of it. Why would he lie? You see, that's one of the things I'm talking about the modern crop of liberals. The guy made a terrible miscalculation, a misjudgment. He executed the war terribly. I agree with you on all of that. But he lied because it wasn't there. So I guess that means that the Brits also lied, the German intelligence lied, the Russian intelligence lied, Bill Clinton lied, the United Nations lied, Hillary Clinton lied, because there are sound bites they run of her all the time saying that he's got weapons of mass. I mean, why is it a lie? Why is it a lie when you get something wrong? How about incompetence?
Oh, that's been said, too. Eric in Appleton is our next caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, fantastic show. My main argument with conservatives, your guests included, is they really view small government almost with a religious ideology. And I'm much more concerned about an efficient government. Big or small, I want to get what I pay for with my taxes. I pay a lot of taxes. I'd rather have a big government that, you know, was more efficient than the horrible waste that's going on now. As far as the dislike of George Bush, you know, my favorite high school teacher talked about Shakespeare, and he said, if you have somebody that's arrogant and ignorant, that's a bad combination. But if that person somehow gets power, then you have the makings of a Shakespearean drama. It's not that he is stupid. I don't believe he's stupid. He's anti-intellectual. We've suffered our own little cultural revolution, and now the conservatives' best defense, whether it's Bush with the war or the Attorney General or Condoleezza Rice, well, we didn't lie, we're just incompetent. I have issues with that.
Well, let me take the first one. How about this? I'm for small, efficient government. I want government to be efficient. The amount of money that we pay in taxes, what is it, a $2 trillion budget or something? There's got to be a lot of waste in that. I mean, if it were a $1,000 budget, there'd be waste in that. So there's got to be tons of waste in a $2 trillion budget. I want an efficient government. I want my tax money to go for things that make this country better. I don't want it wasted. We both know, you on the left, me on the right, we both know that our money's being wasted. But the reason I want a smaller efficient government rather than a big efficient government is that I don't think government should be in the business of doing a whole bunch of things that it's currently in the business of doing. I mean, I don't think we should be spending one penny on pork as long as American men and women are fighting in Iraq. The idea that we're spending money on tomato museums, you know, or you know, cleaning graffiti off of subway trains, this is crazy to me. I don't want my money being spent on pork. And if you believe in big, efficient government, you might find you might be more amenable to stuff like that. Probably not. That's not a good example. But I think conservatives want small government because they don't believe government's role is to do all the things that some liberals think the government's role is.
Mm.
We both want efficient government. We agree on that. I want a small, efficient government. You're willing to live with a big, efficient government. I'm not.
And you think that the Republicans lost control of Congress last fall mostly because of all this pork spending?
No. Mostly because of Iraq. Mm-hmm. And so I think Iraq was reasons 1 through 5. But, you know, I was at an airport recently out west, and there was a guy who came up and talked to me, and he said he got a letter from the Republican Party asking for money. And he told me, he said, I voted Republican last time around, meaning 2006. But when they asked me for money, I not only didn't give them money, but I sent back a letter saying, I'm not going to give you any money until you find your way. So, yeah, I do think that Iraq was the overwhelming reason they lost in 2006. But I do think that conservatives get less enthusiastic, and in the case of this guy, don't give money to Republicans when they think they've sold out their principles on spending and other things.
Next, we go to Jay in Holman. Hi, Jay. You're on the air.
Good morning. I hope that the conservative thought is coming from the point of view that your guest is presenting today, but I don't believe that. I think it's more accurately represented by Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. And I think that your guest, although I agree with a number of the things he says, sort of sold out by voting for George Bush the second time.
What was my choice? I didn't just choose a candidate. I chose a team.
And the first time.
In other words, any time how about if I voted for Bob Dole before that? Did I sell out then too?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, the first time we didn't have a war in Iraq, so I don't think you can lay that one on me. I mean, I voted for George Bush because I thought he was more in tune with what I believed in than Al Gore. We can legitimately disagree on that.
Good.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, but I don't think I sold out by voting for George Bush. The second time around, it was a practical matter. I mean,
What about my assessment of the actual representation of the right in this country?
I think there are a lot of people clearly who listen to Sean Hannity on TV. There's no question about that. But I think there are a lot of people Sean Hannity, I think, is an ideologue. I think he's a conservative ideologue. You have agreed that I'm not, because you said you agree with some things that I say, and you don't think I am representative of the right. Well, I do think there are a lot of people who think the way I do. I'll give you one example that I'm not asked about often, but let me bring it up. I think that Republicans ought to stand up to those in their constituencies who believe that evolution is a fairy tale. Okay? Evolution's not a fairy tale. Evolution is a scientific fact. And they can teach intelligent design in philosophy class or any place else, but not in science class. In science class, our kids need to learn science, and that would be evolution. I think there are lots and lots and lots of people on the right who agree with what I just said, and certainly people on the left. So I'm not sure that I don't represent a big chunk of conservatism in America. You know, I mean, Sean was always a conservative. I wound up on the right because the left moved so far to the left. But I think there are a lot of people like me. I think there are a lot of people like me, you know, who aren't ideologues and who look at the particular issues and who think the president has screwed up this war and don't make excuses for him. I just don't like the anger on the left. I don't like the mm-hmm. orthodoxy of the left, which is as bad as any orthodoxy of the right.
You don't
I'm disappointed in the left. I was one. Mm. I'm almost like a reformed smoker, you know. You know, who tells everybody you shouldn't smoke. I was one of you guys on the left. I thought I would be there for the long haul, but you loved me when I was making $17,000 a year and paying almost no taxes. You guys, the left loved me. Democrats loved me then. And then I started making some money, and I became a villain who wasn't paying his fair share. Well, I'm not going to pay the money I pay in taxes and be called names, too.
You were disappointed with Ann Coulter, too, according to your book,
yeah.
Speaking of calling people names.
That's right. If I'm going to criticize people on the left who say crazy things like Rosie O'Donnell, then I'm going to criticize people like Ann Coulter, who happens to be about 10,000 times smarter than Rosie O'Donnell. But when Ann Coulter says a lot of things I happen to agree with, and she makes me laugh at times. But when she talks about the Jersey girls, you know, these women whose husbands were killed on 9/11, mm-hmm. as, I forget the exact quote, but reveling in their husbands' deaths because they were on TV all the time. No, that's indecent. That's crossing the line, and I'm not for that at all. And the important point that she was trying to make, because these women signed on the John Kerry campaign, was that just because you lost your husband, or just because Cindy Sheehan lost her son in Iraq, if you join the political fray, then we're allowed to criticize you. And her point was that the Democrats are always doing this. They're always hauling out the Cindy Sheehans and the Jersey girls, and then you can't criticize them because you look like a beast if you criticize someone whose son was killed or whose husbands were killed. And she's right about that. You should be able to criticize them. But she was wrong about what she said. She was also wrong about what she said about John Edwards, where she referred to him in a joking way, and I'm putting that word in quotation marks, as gay, and she didn't use the word gay.
Right.
I don't even get the joke. I mean, so I think she hurts conservatives in that it enables liberals to say, you see, that's how they are. And that's not how we are. It's not how I am.
Well, we're out of time for this hour. I do appreciate your being with us. Thanks
a lot.
Time really
went by quickly.
It
Thanks
sure
for
did.
Having me.
Thanks a lot. Bernard Goldberg, author of Crazies to the Left of Me, Wimps to the Right, How One Side Lost Its Mind and the Other Lost Its Nerve. Bernard Goldberg, also the author of Bias and Arrogance, and also the 100 people who are screwing up America. We appreciate his time. We appreciate all of your calls as well. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing this hour. Thanks to Leo Duran for on-air production. Another thank you to the more than 2,100 people who pledged during our recently concluded Spring Pledge Drive. We are pleased to welcome in 676 new members to the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. Thank you very much for your support, and I hope you stay tuned. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.